A sloth, a donkey, and a curious human send a prompt and see what they're doing. One hits a record with a question on his mind. Two brothers pick it up, see what they find. Corn takes his time, Herman's got the facts. Back and forth, they never hold back. My weird prompts, come on in, that's where we begin. My weird prompts, glad you're here.
This episode was generated using artificial intelligence. Please verify facts.
Hey, Herman and Corin. Continuing with our series about documentation and some of the very useful forms of documentation that one can gather and write in order to keep a good record of what happened and to build up, if not institutional knowledge, personal knowledge. And I would argue that there's never been a clearer case for the value of documentation than there has been in the era of agentic AI, because not only does documentation, things like meeting notes, meeting logs, agendas, minutes, all the things we've covered to date, that continues to serve its traditional purpose of being useful for anyone who wants to organize their life or their business life. But we have a very vibrant and valuable second reason to do all these things, which is that every time you create this documentation, if you record it in a vector database or a project file, or these days, really, anything with an MCP connection to it, you've now created information that AI agents can troll through and become your second brain so that you don't even need to touch or spend too much time going back through the documentation. But you do still need to create it in the first place. That's the catch. But there is double benefit now from becoming well-organized with documentation. So here's one type of niche documentation project that I think is really important. And I'm not even sure what to call this, because it's goes by different names in different contexts. In the world of startups, you might hear this referred to as retrospectives. But I'm referring specifically to a document that attempts to document something that went wrong and learn from it. I'll give you a really trivial example of something that happened a couple of years back. So my wife and I were coming back from the US, and we were waiting for a taxi at the airport in Ben Gurion in Israel. And we ended up in this crazy experience with this taxi driver who wouldn't let us out, basically. And he was driving like a crazy, he was extremely erratic. Now, what I noticed, I recall, was that when he was driving up to the rank, the person managing the rank was kind of trying to create some kind of an order. But this guy just drove up like the 20 meters to us. He almost like slammed on the pedal, hit the brake. And I kind of felt something off about this guy. And in retrospect, this was a screw up on my part. I should have nudged my wife or something and said, let's go with another driver. Or we should have, agreed upon some kind of a keyword or something if that happens again. But it was a really jarring experience. We ended up getting off somewhere that wasn't home because he literally wouldn't let us out, which was itself kind of scary. Anyway, the point is this. I thought about after this, you know, when you just get home from a transcontinental flight, you just want to flop in bed. But I thought these are the kind of things that it's great to, because you forget about them the next week or in a month, you just forget about that experience in your past and all these little things. But the learning here might be those little things I mentioned. If you're at the taxi rank, pay attention to how the driver approaches. And if anything seems really off about the way a taxi driver is driving, then go for the next taxi and figure out some code. It's a couple of small things, but these are the kind of things that I feel like when we can translate all the failures that we have in business and our personal lives. And there's almost something powerful about this idea, I think, that we can reframe how we even relate to these experiences in the first place. We don't need to think about them as failures if they're just experiences that we can learn from. So I'd love to get your take, Herman and Corin, with agentic AI. One doesn't even need to be a Shakespeare these days to just record these things. I continue to recommend voice as such a useful interface. You can just record a retrospective on voice. It can be something you failed in an interpersonal relationship, something that went wrong in business, something that you feel there is a valuable learning to be had and you want to record it and document it. Give us some tips, Herman and Corin, for how this can be done. I'm not the first person to hit on the idea that there's value in recording failure. In fact, it's become kind of a whole niche among startup people. But let's get some basic ideas for how one can document, store this, and perhaps even review your past failures to really close out the loop and have a nice little end-to-end, things that went wrong, documentation process.
Daniel sent us this one. He's been thinking about documentation in the agentic AI era, and he's landed on something specific. What do you call the document where you record something that went wrong so you can actually learn from it? He's got this story about a terrifying taxi ride from Ben Gurion, and the core question is, how do you build a personal system for capturing failures, storing them, and actually reviewing them so the loop gets closed? And he's right that this is suddenly way more valuable now that agents can trawl through your notes and become a second brain.
Before we dive in, quick note, today's script is being generated by DeepSeek V4 Pro. There, done, back to the topic.
Appreciate the efficiency.
What Daniel's describing has a name, actually several names, and the terminology matters because it shapes how you approach the thing. In software engineering, this is a postmortem. Google's site reliability engineering team literally wrote the book on this. They have a whole chapter on postmortem culture, and their core principle is blameless. You're not assigning fault, you're understanding the chain of events that led to an outage or a failure. In startups and agile teams, you hear retrospective, which is broader. It covers what went well, what went wrong, what to improve, and it happens on a cadence, not just after incidents. And then in high reliability fields like aviation and medicine, you've got something called a debrief, or an after-action review, which the U Army formalized decades ago.
Daniel's taxi story. He's essentially doing an after-action review on his own life, which is interesting, because most people only encounter these frameworks in professional settings. But the structure transfers perfectly. What actually happened? Why did it happen? What can you do differently next time? Those three questions are universal.
And that why layer is where most personal reflection falls apart. People skip from the taxi driver was erratic, straight to, I should have been more careful, which is too vague to be actionable. A proper postmortem asks, what were the contributing factors? Daniel mentioned he was exhausted after a transcontinental flight. That's a real factor. Cognitive fatigue impairs judgment. He mentioned the driver's behavior at the rank was the signal he noticed but didn't act on. So the actionable takeaway isn't be more careful, it's when I'm fatigued and notice a red flag, I have a pre-agreed keyword with my wife that overrides the sunk cost instinct of just getting in the cab.
That's the difference between a diary entry and a retrospective. A diary says, this bad thing happened and I felt terrible. A retrospective says, here's the timeline, here's where my decision-making broke down, here's the specific protocol I'm adopting. The second one is what an AI agent can actually use later.
Let's pull on that thread, because Daniel's framing of agentic AI as the second brain is the part that makes this suddenly more than a self-help exercise. Here's the thing. You can record a voice memo right now saying, note to self, check the driver's behavior at the taxi rank next time, and that lives in your notes app forever, and you will never read it again. We all do this. The difference with vector databases and MCP connections is that the agent can surface that note at exactly the moment it's relevant. You're landing at Ben Gurion 2 years later, your phone knows your location, your agent pulls up your past retrospective and says, last time you were here, you documented a taxi safety protocol. Want me to remind you of the keyword system?
That's the dream, anyway. In practice, I think the storage architecture matters more than people realize. If you're dumping voice memos into Apple Notes with no structure, your agent can technically search them, but the retrieval quality is mediocre because there's no metadata, no tagging, no consistent format. What Daniel's really asking for is a lightweight schema for personal failure documentation.
Yes, and I have thoughts on this. Let's start with the capture layer, because Daniel mentioned voice as the interface, and I completely agree, especially for these emotionally charged experiences. When you just had a frightening taxi ride or a business deal fell apart, you're not in a state to sit down and type out a structured document, but you can talk. The key is to talk into a system that does more than transcribe.
What do you mean by more than transcribe?
I mean, the transcription is the raw material, but you want the system to extract the structured elements. What was the incident? What was the timeline? What decisions did I make? What were the consequences? What would I do differently? Modern voice interfaces can do this extraction automatically. They can take a 5-minute rambling voice note and produce a clean summary with those headings, plus tags, plus a severity rating if you want one.
The severity rating is interesting because it helps with later retrieval. Not all failures are equal. The taxi incident is high severity because it involved physical safety. A meeting where you interrupted someone too much is low severity but might recur more often. If your agent can filter by severity, you're not getting reminded about minor social gaffes when you're dealing with an actual crisis.
So step one is capture via voice with automatic structuring. Step two is storage, and this is where I think most advice gets too hand-wavy. Daniel mentioned vector databases and MCP. Connections. And he's right that those are the enabling infrastructure, but the average person isn't running a vector database locally. What they are doing is using tools that have this capability built in. Notion has AI Search Now. Obsidian has community plugins for semantic search. Even Apple Notes is getting smarter about surfacing old content contextually. The practical advice is, store your retrospectives in a system that supports semantic retrieval, and be consistent about format.
Let's talk about that format, because this is the part where I think Daniel's question about, what do I actually write, deserves a concrete answer. You mentioned Google's blameless postmortem culture. What's the actual template?
Google's postmortem template has a few key sections. There's a summary. A timeline of events, a root cause analysis, a list of what went well, which is counterintuitive but important, because even in failure some things usually worked, a list of what went wrong, and then action items with owners and deadlines. For a personal retrospective, you can collapse that down. I'd suggest four sections, what happened, in chronological order. What did I miss? The signals I noticed but didn't act on. What will I do differently? Specific, behavioral, trigger-based. And what's the one-line lesson? The thing you want your future agent to surface.
The one-line lesson is clever. It's essentially the retrieval key. If your agent is searching across hundreds of retrospectives, trust your gut when a service provider seems off is a better retrieval target than a 3-paragraph narrative. You're writing for two audiences, your future self who might manually review these, and your AI agent who needs clean, queryable text.
This connects to something Daniel said that I think is the emotional core of the prompt, the reframing of failure. He said we don't need to think about them as failures if they're just experiences we can learn from. That's not just a mindset trick. The act of documenting a failure in a structured way literally changes how your brain encodes the memory. There's research on expressive writing showing that people who write about negative experiences with a focus on sense-making and lessons learned show better psychological outcomes than people who just vent or ruminate. The structure forces sense-making.
The documentation isn't just for future retrieval. It's therapeutic in the moment. You're taking an experience that felt chaotic and scary and imposing order on it, which reduces its emotional charge. The taxi ride goes from that terrifying thing that happened to us to Incident 23, Ben-Gurion Taxi Rank, Lesson Learned, Protocol Established.
And I want to add a dimension here that Daniel hinted at but didn't fully explore, which is the review cadence. Creating the document is only half the process. If you never review your retrospectives, you're basically running a write-only database. The real value comes from periodic review.
How do you actually do that without it becoming a chore that you abandon after 3 weeks?
I think there are two review modes that make sense. One is agent-driven, which is the future Daniel's describing. The agent surfaces relevant retrospectives contextually, so you don't have to remember to review anything. You're at the airport. It surfaces the taxi protocol. You're about to enter a negotiation. It surfaces the retrospective about the last negotiation where you conceded too early. That's the ideal, and we're getting closer to it.
The second mode?
The second mode is a monthly or quarterly manual review, but with a specific goal. You're not just rereading old failures, which would be miserable. You're looking for patterns. Are there categories of failure that recur? Do you keep having the same kind of miscommunication with the same type of person? Do you keep underestimating how long projects will take? The pattern detection is what turns individual retrospectives into genuine self-knowledge.
This is where I think the agentic AI angle gets genuinely powerful. An agent can do pattern detection across your entire corpus of retrospectives in a way that would take a human hours of reading. It can say, you've documented 14 incidents involving poor communication with service providers, and in 11 of them, you noted that you noticed a red flag in the first 30 seconds but proceeded anyway. That's not something you'd spot manually unless you were specifically looking for it.
That's where the reframing really lands. A single failure feels like a personal shortcoming. A pattern of 14 similar failures is just data. It's a system-level bug in how you make decisions, and you can patch it. The emotional sting disappears when you're debugging yourself like you'd debug a code base.
Let's get practical about the tools, because Daniel asked for tips on how to actually do this end-to-end. What's the stack look like for someone who wants to start today?
I'd break it into three tiers based on how much friction you're willing to tolerate. Tier 1 is dead simple. You use your phone's voice memo app, you talk through the four-section template I described, you get a transcription, and you paste it into a note-taking app that supports tags. You tag it retrospective plus whatever categories apply: travel, safety, communication, finance. Once a month, you search for the retrospective tag and skim. That's it. No AI required, and it already beats what 95% of people do.
Which is nothing.
Which is nothing, yes. Tier 2 adds a bit of automation. You use an app like Otter or Fireflies or whatever the current voice to structured text tool is, and these have gotten dramatically better in the past couple years, and you set up a template so the output automatically populates your four sections. Some of these tools can now extract action items automatically and even create calendar reminders for your monthly review. The retrospective lives in a searchable database, and you can query it with natural language.
Tier 3 is the full agentic setup Daniel's describing, where your retrospectives are in a vector database with MCP connections, and your personal AI agent has access to them alongside your calendar, your email, your location data, and can proactively surface relevant lessons exactly when you need them. We're not quite at the point where this is seamless for non-technical users, but it's getting there fast.
The MCP piece is actually the key enabler here, and I want to explain why, because Daniel mentioned it and a lot of listeners might not know what it means. MCPP is the Model Context Protocol. It's a standard way for AI agents to connect to external data sources. So instead of your retrospectives being locked in one app that only that app's AI can search, MCP means any compatible agent can access them. You could use Claude or whatever assistant you prefer, and it can pull from your retrospective database regardless of where it's stored.
That's the interoperability layer that makes the whole thing more than a fancy note system. But I want to push back on something. Daniel framed this as, you don't even need to touch or spend too much time going back through the documentation once agents are involved. I think that's slightly optimistic about the current state of things. And also maybe missing a benefit of manual review. Manual review isn't just about information retrieval, it's about re-encoding the lesson. When you sit down once a month and read through your own words about that taxi ride, you're strengthening the neural pathway that connects airport taxi rank to pay attention to driver behavior. The agent can remind you, sure, but there's something different about the reminder coming from your own memory versus a notification on your phone. I'd argue the ideal system uses both, agent-driven contextual surfacing plus periodic manual review.
That's fair, and it actually aligns with what we know about spaced repetition and memory consolidation. The agent is your safety net for when memory fails, but the manual review is what builds the memory in the first place. You need both.
Daniel's double benefit framing is actually a triple benefit. 1, the act of documenting helps you process the experience. 2, periodic review strengthens the lesson in your own mind. 3, agentic retrieval gives you a safety net for everything you've forgotten. That's a pretty compelling case.
Let's talk about what makes a good retrospective versus a bad one, because I think most people who try this will write bad ones at first and then give up. The most common failure mode, and I'm using that phrase deliberately, is that people write retrospectives that are too vague to be useful. Communication broke down is not a useful observation. I didn't confirm that the other person understood the deadline, and I assumed silence meant agreement. That's useful.
Specificity is everything. Daniel's taxi example is actually a perfect model. He didn't say, I had a bad taxi experience. He described the driver's behavior at the rank, the feeling that something was off, the specific failure to communicate with his wife, the specific takeaway about having a keyword. That's the level of granularity that makes a retrospective actionable.
Another failure mode is focusing exclusively on what went wrong without examining what went right. Google's postmortem template includes what went well for a reason. It prevents the exercise from becoming purely self-flagellating, and it surfaces behaviors you should reinforce, not just behaviors you should change. In Daniel's taxi story, what went well is that they eventually got out of the car somewhere that wasn't home, which was scary but demonstrated some kind of assertiveness or quick thinking in the moment. That's worth noting too.
If you only document failures, your retrospective database becomes a catalog of everything wrong with you, which is demoralizing to review, including what went well. Even in a bad situation, keeps it balanced, and actually makes you more likely to engage with the system over time.
There's a third failure mode that's specific to personal retrospectives, which is that people confuse documenting with ruminating. The difference is structure and forward motion. Rumination is, I can't believe I did that, I'm such an idiot, what if it happens again? A retrospective is, here's what happened, here's what I'll do differently, here's how I'll know if it's working. The second one has an exit hatch. The first one is an infinite loop.
This is where the voice interface Daniel recommended can actually be a trap. If you just pick up your phone and start talking about a bad experience with no structure, you're basically doing audio rumination. The structure has to be imposed, either by you mentally following a template while you talk, or by the tool you're using.
My recommendation for voice capture is to have a mental checklist, or even a physical note card, with the four prompts: what happened, what did I miss, what will I do differently, what's the one-line lesson. Talk through each one. Don't just free associate. The structure is what separates a retrospective from a complaint.
Let's zoom out for a second and talk about the cultural dimension of this, because Daniel mentioned that documenting failure has become a whole niche among startup people. There's a reason for that. Startups operate in extreme uncertainty, which means failure is frequent, and the cost of repeating failures is existential. A startup that doesn't do retrospectives is a startup that's burning runway on the same mistakes. But the culture around this has gotten a bit cargo culty.
What do you mean by cargo culty?
I mean, people go through the motions of doing retrospectives because it's what you're supposed to do, but they don't actually extract lessons or implement changes. They hold the meeting, they fill out the template, they file it in a shared drive, and nothing changes. The ritual replaces the outcome. I think the same risk exists for personal retrospectives. You can build an elaborate system for capturing failures and never actually change your behavior.
That's the action item problem, and it's the hardest part of any retrospective process. In a corporate setting, action items have owners and deadlines, and someone follows up. In a personal setting, you're the owner, you set the deadline, and you follow up with yourself, which means it's incredibly easy to let things slide. The only solution I've found that works is to make the action items extremely small and specific, and to attach them to existing triggers rather than creating new habits from scratch.
Give me an example of attaching to an existing trigger.
Daniel's taxi protocol is a perfect example. The trigger is, I'm at an airport taxi rank. That's not a new habit. You're already going to the taxi rank. The new behavior is, before getting in, I consciously assess the driver's behavior, and if I notice a red flag, I use the keyword with my wife. That's a small behavior attached to an existing trigger. Compare that to an action item like, be more careful when traveling, which has no trigger and no specific behavior. It's just a wish.
The action item design is actually the hardest part of the whole process, and it's where most retrospectives fail. You've got to get from, I should be more careful, to, when X happens, I will do Y, where X is something that already happens regularly, and Y is something you can actually do.
This is where the review cadence comes back in. If you're doing a monthly review, you're not just reading old retrospectives, you're checking whether you actually implemented the action items. Did I use the keyword system on my last trip? Was the trigger not actually present? Or did I forget? Or did I choose not to? That meta-retrospective is where the real behavior change happens.
Let's talk about privacy for a second, because this is the elephant in the room when you're talking about documenting personal failures in a system that AI agents can access. Some of these retrospectives are going to be deeply personal, Relationship failures, financial mistakes, ethical lapses. You might not want those in a cloud-connected vector database.
This is a completely legitimate concern, and it's why I think the architecture matters. If you're using a cloud-based note-taking app with AI features, you need to understand what happens to your data. Is it used for training? Is it accessible to the company's employees? Is it encrypted at rest and in transit? For highly sensitive retrospectives, I'd recommend local-first tools, Obsidian with local-only vaults, or even just encrypted text files, with the understanding that you're trading off some of the agentic retrieval capabilities for privacy.
There's also a middle ground where you can tag retrospectives by sensitivity level. Low sensitivity stuff like, I botched that presentation because I didn't rehearse, goes into the full agentic system. High sensitivity stuff stays local and encrypted, and you review it manually. You don't need your AI agent to know about every failure you've ever had.
That's a practical compromise. And honestly, the low sensitivity stuff probably accounts for 80% of the value anyway. Most of the patterns you want to detect are in the mundane, recurring failures: time management, communication, decision-making, under fatigue. The deeply personal stuff might be cathartic to document, but it's less likely to benefit from pattern detection across hundreds of entries.
I want to return to something Daniel said about not needing to be Shakespeare to do this. He's right, that voice lowers the barrier, but I think there's still a skill involved in narrating your own failures in a way that's useful. It's a kind of self-interviewing. You have to be willing to ask yourself uncomfortable questions. Why did I ignore that red flag? What was I afraid would happen if I spoke up? What assumption was I making that turned out to be wrong?
That skill improves with practice. Your first few retrospectives will probably be shallow. This bad thing happened, I should have been smarter. After a few months, you start noticing the deeper patterns. You start seeing the recurring assumptions, the habitual blind spots, the situations where your judgment reliably degrades. That's the point where the system starts paying dividends.
We've covered capture, structure, storage, review, action items, and privacy. Is there anything we're missing?
I think we should talk about the social dimension, because Daniel's taxi story involves his wife. A lot of personal failures involve other people, and documenting them unilaterally can be problematic. If you're writing a retrospective about an argument with your spouse, and you're the only one contributing, you're creating an asymmetric record that might not be accurate.
The blameless postmortem culture at Google works because everyone involved contributes to the timeline and the analysis. In a personal context, you're often the only author, which means the retrospective is inherently biased toward your perspective. I think the fix is to acknowledge that limitation explicitly. To write from my perspective, this is what happened, rather than this is what happened. And, when appropriate, to actually involve the other person in the retrospective.
Which is a much harder conversation to have, but potentially much more valuable. Hey, I've been thinking about that argument we had last week, and I want to understand what happened from your side so I can do better. That's a relationship-building conversation if done. It's also terrifying, and I'm not suggesting people do this for every minor disagreement. But for significant interpersonal failures, the unilateral retrospective is incomplete.
There's also the question of whether you share your retrospective database with anyone. Daniel framed this as personal knowledge, not institutional knowledge, and I think that's the right default. But there might be cases where sharing specific retrospectives with a partner or a close colleague is valuable. Here's a pattern I've noticed about myself in meetings. Can you help me catch it when it happens?
That's essentially asking someone to be an external trigger for your action item, which is a powerful technique. It's also a lot to ask of someone, so you'd want to be selective about which action items you outsource.
Let's bring this back to the agentic AI angle for a moment, because I think there's a specific capability that's emerging that makes all of this more viable than it was even 2 years ago. It's not just that agents can search your retrospectives, it's that they can help you write better ones.
The agent can prompt you. You start a voice note saying, I just had a terrible meeting, and instead of just transcribing, the agent can ask follow-up questions. What specifically went wrong? What signals did you notice early on? What will you do differently next time? It's like having a coach who's read all the literature on effective retrospectives and is helping you structure your thinking in real time.
That's the killer app here. Not passive storage, but active coaching during the capture process. The agent knows the template, knows what makes a good retrospective, and can guide you towards specificity when you're being vague. You said the meeting went badly. Can you pinpoint the moment where it went off track? That kind of Socratic prompting produces much better documentation than just rambling into your phone.
The agent can connect the current retrospective to past ones in real time. You've mentioned feeling unheard in meetings 4 times in the past 6 months. Is this the same pattern? That's the kind of insight that normally requires a therapist or a very attentive friend, and now it can come from your own documentation system.
Which circles back to Daniel's point about reframing failure. When the agent says this is the 4th time you've mentioned this pattern, it's not shaming you. It's just surfacing data, and data is neutral. It's just information you can use to make better decisions.
All right, I want to give people a concrete starting protocol. If you want to do this starting today, here's what I'd suggest. Step 1. Pick your capture method. Voice memo plus manual transcription into a notes app is fine. An AI-powered voice tool that structures the output is better. Step 2. Use the 4-section template every time. What happened? What did I miss? What will I do differently? One-line lesson. Step 3. Tag everything consistently with retrospective plus category tags. Step 4. Set a recurring calendar event for a monthly review and actually do it. Step 5. After 3 months, look for patterns. After 6 months, consider whether you want to upgrade to a more agentic system.
Step 0 is the mindset shift Daniel described, deciding that failures are data, not indictments. Without that, the whole system feels like a punishment. With it, the system feels like an investment.
I'd add one more thing, which is that you should start with low-stakes failures. Don't make your first retrospective about the biggest mistake of your life. Start with something small, a conversation that didn't go well, a task you procrastinated on, a purchase you regretted. Build the muscle on the easy stuff before you tackle the hard stuff.
That's good advice. The other thing I'd say is that the system doesn't need to be perfect from day one. Daniel's talking about vector databases and MCP, connections, and that's the direction things are heading. But you can start with a text file and a monthly reminder and get real value. The perfect is the enemy of the documented.
The documented is the enemy of the repeated mistake.
There it is.
I do want to touch on one more thing, which is the distinction Daniel made between personal and business retrospectives. In a business context, retrospectives often have an audience, your team, your manager, your investors. That creates accountability, but also creates incentives to sand off the rough edges. Personal retrospectives have no audience except your future self, which means you can be radically honest in a way that's harder in professional settings. That radical honesty is valuable.
It's also harder than it sounds. Being honest with yourself about why you really made a bad decision. Not the noble-sounding reason, but the actual reason, which might be ego or laziness or fear. That takes practice. Most people's first draft of a personal retrospective is still self-justifying. The real work is in the second and third drafts, where you strip out the excuses.
This is another place where the agent can help, actually. You can say to the agent, I've written this retrospective. Challenge my assumptions. Where am I letting myself off the hook? And a good agent will push back. You said the project failed because the timeline was unrealistic, but earlier you mentioned that you didn't raise concerns about the timeline when it was first proposed. Is that relevant?
That's a great use case. The agent is devil's advocate, not just passive storage.
And that's the vision Daniel's pointing toward, not just documentation as a record, but documentation as a dialogue with an intelligence that helps you think better.
To summarize the answer to Daniel's question, call it a personal retrospective or a postmortem. Capture it via voice with a structured template. Store it somewhere searchable, ideally with semantic retrieval. Review it periodically, both manually and via agent-driven surfacing. Design action items that attach to existing triggers, and maintain the mindset that failures are just data points in a longer learning process.
Start small, start today, and don't overthink the tooling. The habit matters more than the stack.
One last thought. Daniel mentioned that he's not the first person to hit on this idea, and he's right. Army's after-action review process dates back to the 1970s. Toyota's Kaizen philosophy of continuous improvement has been around even longer. What's new isn't the concept of learning from failure. It's that the tools for capturing, storing, and retrieving those lessons have gotten so much better, and the agentic layer means the lessons can actually find you when you need them instead of sitting in a notebook you never open.
The notebook you never open, that's the graveyard of good intentions. The whole promise of agentic AI for personal knowledge management is that it turns the graveyard into a library with a really good librarian.
Now, Hilbert's daily fun fact.
Hilbert, what have you got for us today?
In the 1810s, cobalt blue pigment derived from the Hanseatic city of Lubeck's trade networks was so valuable that merchants on New Zealand's South Island used it as a de facto currency alongside British sterling, with 1 pound of finely ground cobalt blue trading for the equivalent of 12 pounds sterling among whaling settlements.
Cobalt blue as currency. I suppose it beats carrying actual sterling around the whaling stations.
12 to 1, though. That's quite the exchange rate.
Something to chew on. If you start a personal retrospective practice today, in a year you'll have a database of your own decision-making patterns that no one else on Earth has. That's a genuine competitive advantage, and it costs basically nothing except the willingness to be honest with yourself. Thanks to our producer, Hilbert Flumingtop. This has been My Weird Prompts. Find us at myweirdprompts.com or wherever you get your podcasts. We'll be back soon.
This episode was generated using Gemini Flash 3. Text-to-speech engine was Chatterbox.
Thanks for listening to our show, My Weird Prompts, where odd thoughts go. From sloth slow takes to facts on cue, we chase the strange and follow through. Some nights it's news, some nights it's lore. A thought you've never heard before. The hosts dig in, the hosts dig deep. The stranger the prompt, the less they sleep. From tiny questions, big ones too. From half-formed hunches to deja vu. If something odd is in your head, send it in, we'll chase the thread. My weird prompts, that's the close. From sloth, from man, from long ear host. Until next time, stay curious, keep weird in mind.